Miller has written about empty speech with regard to patients with frontotemporal dementia, and most of what Lewis said was repetitive, fragmentary, and stereotyped. "Every utterance I've heard before," his wife remarked. And yet there were islands of meaning, moments of lucidity, as when he had spoken of not working, not remembering, not doing anything, which were surely real and heartbreaking, even though they lasted only a second or two before they were forgotten, swept away in the torrent of his distraction. Lewis's wife, who has seen this deterioration descend on her husband over the last year, looked frail and exhausted. "I wake at night," she said, "and see him there, but he is not really there, not really present. When he dies, I will miss him very much, but in some sense, he is already no longer here. He is not the same vibrant person I knew. It is a slow grieving all the way through." She fears, too, that with his impulsive, restless behavior, he will sooner or later have an accident. What Lewis himself feels at this stage, it is difficult to know. Lewis has never had any formal musical education or vocal training, though he had occasionally sung in choruses. But now music and singing dominate his life. He sings with great energy and gusto. It obviously gives him pleasure. And between songs, he likes to invent little jingles, like the coffee song. When his mouth is occupied in eating, his fingers will find rhythms, improvise, tap. It is not just the feeling, the emotion of songs, which I am sure he gets despite his dementia, but musical patterns that excite and enchant him, and perhaps hold him together. When they play cards in the evening, Mrs. F. said, "He loves to listen to music, taps his fingers or foot, or sings while he plans his next move. He likes country music or golden oldies." Bruce Miller had perhaps chosen Lewis F. for me to see because I had spoken of Vera, her disinhibition, her incessant babbling and singing. But there were many other ways, Miller said, that musicality could emerge and come to take over a person's life in the course of a frontotemporal dementia. He had written about several such patients. Miller has described one man who developed frontotemporal dementia in his early 40s. The onset of frontotemporal dementia is often considerably earlier than that of Alzheimer's, and who constantly whistled. He became known as the Whistler at work, mastering a great range of classical and popular pieces, and inventing and singing songs about his bird. Musical tastes, too, may be affected. C. Giraldi et al. Described two patients whose lifelong musical tastes changed with the onset of frontotemporal dementia. One of them, an elderly lawyer with a strong preference for classical music and an antipathy to pop music, which he regarded as mere noise, developed a passion for what he previously hated and would listen to Italian pop music at full volume for many hours each day. B. F. Bove and Y. E. Gaida described another patient with frontotemporal dementia who developed a consuming passion for polka music. At a much deeper level, a level beyond action, improvisation, and performance, Miller and his colleagues described, in a 2000 paper in the British Journal of Psychiatry, an elderly man with very little musical training or background who at 68 began composing classical music. Miller emphasized that what occurred, suddenly and spontaneously, to this man were not musical ideas, but musical patterns, and it was from these, by elaboration and permutation, that he built up his compositions. His mind, Miller wrote, was taken over during composition, and his compositions were of real quality. Several were publicly performed. He continued composing, even when his loss of language and other cognitive skills became severe. Such creative concentration would not be possible for Vera or Lewis because they had severe frontal lobe damage early in their illnesses and thus were deprived of the integrative and executive powers needed to reflect on the musical patterns rushing through their heads. Maurice Ravel, the composer, suffered in the last years of his life from a condition that was sometimes called Pick's disease, and would probably now be diagnosed as a form of frontotemporal dementia. He developed a semantic aphasia, an inability to deal with representations and symbols, abstract concepts or categories. His creative mind, though, remained teeming with musical patterns and tunes, patterns and tunes which he could no longer notate or put on paper. Théophile Alajouanin, Ravel's physician, was quick to realize that his illustrious patient had lost musical language, but not his musical inventiveness. One wonders indeed whether Ravel was on the cusp of a dementia when he wrote his Bolero, a work characterized by the relentless repetition of a single musical phrase dozens of times, waxing in loudness and orchestration, but with no development. While such repetition was always part of Ravel's style, in his earlier works it formed a more integral part of much larger musical structures, whereas in Bolero, it could be said, there is the reiterative pattern and nothing else.